Moadim leSimcha. Today's daf in Masechet Beitza, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Dalet. We're holding right at the bottom, at the beginning of the new perek, and we're starting today from Chof Gimel, Omud Beit, the Mishnah that was introduced by our kapitan yesterday. Ein tzadin dagin mina bivarium biyom tov veinotnim lifneihem bizono. So first, we begin over here with the first of the clear-cut indications that things are not as simple as we thought they were, because we thought that when it comes to the inyonim of eichol nefesh, there should be no problem of doing whatever it is that needs to be done. And over here, it says that you're not allowed to go and to fetch fish from the aquarium where you're raising them, and these vivarium, of course, is from the live, the word for living beings that were kept in a container, vivarium, in the Roman. And lechora, it should be mutter, because it's melechas eichol nefesh. So here is where we start getting into the problems of how to define which particular things are okay for tzorech eichol nefesh, and which things are not. So Rashi's approach, as we've spoken about before, Rashi's approach is to take the question of whether it needs to be done on Yontif into consideration. If it's something that if it were done yesterday, it would be not fresh or not as good, so then the Torah is matir it. But over here, you could certainly trap these fish yesterday, keep them alive by keeping them in the water, and therefore, it could have been done before Yontif. And that's the definition of which things are tzorech eichol nefesh that are mutter. This is the way Rashi learns. He's really almost alone in learning that way, because there are many other approaches. And, I mean, Tosfos disagrees very vehemently, because later on we're going to see in the sugya of makshirei eichol nefesh that it's only there that we bring this distinction of the things that could have been done before Yontif versus the makshirin that couldn't have been done before Yontif. But not when it comes to the eichol nefesh itself. And what, therefore, the other Rishonim we spoke about yesterday, some of the ideas, namely that melechas avodah could be something which, normally speaking, you wouldn't do for yourself in your own home. It would be something that you would be somech on for others, you would pay others to do, and that's called kol melechas avodah lo ta'asu. The Ramban's approach is similar to that, and what he explains is that melechet avodah are things that, it's not nogeh that you'd hire other people, but it's your work, meaning it's your long-term work. It's not something that you're dealing with in your kitchen ad hoc. So when you're talking about the heter of the, not if it's not called the melocha, kol melechas avodah, it would mean that these are things that you're just doing for yourself for a brief period, and it's not that which is your planned aveda. Masha'enken, things like this, like tzeda and so on, these are things that are done for long-term planning. So like you're going to have, a side of beef. That's not something you're going to finish for breakfast. I mean, unless they're, well, he's not here, so I can't make fun of him. That's not something you're going to be doing for breakfast, right? So that's something that is long-term planned. And therefore, the idea is that anything that is not part of your kitchen, is the way the Ramban puts it. You know, these are the things that are in your kitchen. Afia, bishul, batlatsud, balei chayim, that are outside of your rishos, or going ahead and picking things, like kor davar migidulo, we have to go out to the field. That's not your kitchen work. And when we refer to melechas eichol nefesh, it's not that it's just for the purposes of eating. It's that it's for the way in which you live in your home on Yontif as a regular day to take care of yourself. So that's the Ramban's approach. And I mean, according to this, there would be no specific difference about tzeda and other things. But it's interesting that the Tosfos learns, and this is a shita that he brought early on in the Masechet of Rabbi Nochayim Mikinon, and that is that the concept of tzeda is similar to kitzira, because it's basically gathering up what it is that you need from the field, whether it's in terms of living beings or it's in terms of your agricultural produce. And the as he brings from the Yerushalmi, that since it says, Ushmartem et ha-matzot, so what that means is the Lashon of over there of Shmira is from Lisha. Lisha and onwards is where you need Shmira. And that Lashon of Shmira here, Lagabe Yonta, means the only things that are being given in your hands are from Lisha upwards. But anything that's prior to Lisha is not included in the Heter of Echol Nefesh. There's also other psukim that the Yerushalmi brings as Ramos. And the question whether this is the Oraisa, the Ran claims that the ideal of here is really a Derabbanan, and that Seda is only Osir Midivrayan, and that the idea of the Ramban, that the Chachomim were machmer on things that are usually done for a number of days at a time, that is a Derabbanan Chumrah, but it's not part of the Etzib definition, the Oraisa. However, many of the Rishonim hold that you would actually be loika on it. The Tosfos understands that the Tzeda is an Issur D'Oraisa and you be Chayav Malkus. So again, we've talked about three or four different approaches, and it all is basically introduced with our Mishnah today about Ein Sadin. So this is the beginning of a rather foundational element. So, Ein Sadin Dagim Min Avivarim B'Yomtov, you also can't put food in front of them. Now here too, there's a major machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi sees no connection between the Isser of Tzeda and feeding the fish, which is very problematic in the Gemara, as we're going to see. So according to Rashi, the reason you can't feed the fish is because it's not mizonoteim alech. Fish manage to get along without human feeding. They find things in the water to nibble on. Large fish eat small fish. They go for a long time without any noticeable nourishment. They're filtering out nourishment from the water and so on. Tosfos says, that's not the point. The point is that wherever you cannot do tzeda, you cannot do feeding. Because this is the gzeira derabbanan that we're afraid that if you're going to come to feed them, then you're going to come to be tzad them. And anybody who's done this kind of thing, feeding fish in a vivarium, knows exactly why that's true. Because, I mean, you throw in a little bit of food in these vivariums, and you get like 400 fish that come jumping out, trying to get that food all in one place. And it's the easiest thing in the world to be beside them at that point. And because of that, Tosfos understands that it's Haba HaTalia. Wherever there's no tzeda, there's no feeding. Okay, aval, tzadin chayev of bin ha-bevarian, you would be able to take a chayot, or even birds, if they are in a vivarium, because they were already nitzud before yontiv by being in the vivarium. So all you're doing is basically you're taking them off of the shelf, because the vivarium is essentially, they're in the fridge, except they're alive. V'notinim lifnei ha-mizonot, and therefore there'd be no problem. Again, according to Tosfos, it's, and therefore, there's no problem in feeding them, because there's no problem of tzeda. According to Rashi, you're allowed to feed them, because it's mizonoteim alecha. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, well, now, let's not oversimplify. Lo kol ha-bevarim shavim, I mean, it's not all the same, just because it's called a bevarim. The point is, to look at this general approach. The klal is, that anything which is still mechusar tzeda. So in other words, even if it's still inside of the vivarium, you are going to have to still trap it. So then you're not allowed to take it. Because what's the difference? If it's technically in a vivarium, you're still going to have to go and trap it again. I think I'm just going to describe what defines that. But if it does not require additional trapping, then what would be the problem? Since it was already nitzot from before yontiv. Ask the Gemara, what do we do about this contradiction? The Braita says, Bevarian, shel chayav shelafot, ein sadin, nam biyom tov. You're not allowed to use a bivarian, forget about fish, even for chayot v'ofot. And furthermore, it says you're not allowed to feed them. They know them if they miss or not. So, this is a direct contradiction. Chaya to chaya is a contradiction. The Mishnah said you can. The Braita says you cannot. And kasha ofot, The Mishnah says you can, and the Braita says you cannot. How do we explain this away? Now, I know how to deal very simply with the contradiction about the animals. That, yes, because Mishnah Machaya Chayelo Kasha, we know that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan in Masechet Shabbat, and that would explain the difference. Because in the Mishnah in Shabbat, it says, the Tanan Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hatzat Sipor Lemigdal, if you trap a bird by getting it to go fly into a closet, and then you close the closet door on it, or you trap a deer by getting it to go into the house, and then you close the door in the house. So then you would be chayev for tzedah, because you were mechal Shabbos. Now, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that only if you get the deer into a house and you close the door. But if you got that deer into the equivalent of Bavarian, let's see, get it into the front yard, you know, or into some type of large enclosure, then that would not be considered to be trapped. And that would mean that the opposite would be true in terms of Yontif. Because since it needed to be trapped before Yontif in order to be mutter to take it out of the Bavarian, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, it was not trapped when it was in the Bavarian, because he says you're only chayav on Shabbos for trapping it in the house, which means that if it would be in a Bavarian, it still needs to be trapped, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, the Braita says you're not allowed to trap it, because it's going like Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas the Chachomim say, well, when it comes to the bird, we agree with Rabbi Yehuda. If you trap it by getting it into a closet and slamming a door on it, that, yes. But as far as we're concerned, a tzvi, the deer, could be trapped even if you just get into your garden or you get into your front yard or a bevarian. So since, according to the Chachomim, the tzvi is already considered to be nitzod when it's in the bevarian, there'd be no problem in taking it out. So that's the way our Mishnah says. Majenga the Bright, that was going according to Rebuta, says just because it's in a bevarian doesn't mean it's considered to be trapped. So that's not a problem. But what is a problem? Ofot ha'ofot. That remains a problem because the Rabbanan agreed to Rabbi Yehuda when it came to birds. And they said that we agree that unless the bird is in a closet as opposed to Bavarian, so then it would not be considered to be trapped. So I'd explain the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braita. Now, don't try to give me obvious type of answer. I mean, what you're going to tell me is that, well, I mean, we're talking about two different situations because the one that says that you're allowed to take the bird like our Mishnah. Maybe that's talking about where the Bavarian has a roof, so the birds can fly away. That's a Bevar Makura. But when you're talking about the Braita, maybe the Braita is talking about a Bevar She'ena Makura. And therefore, the bird can fly away. So if you trap it on Yontav, so then it would be Usur. But you can't say that, you see. Because in the very same case, didn't we talk about a house? We talked about getting a bird into a closet and getting a deer into the house. But to get the bird into the house is not considered to be tzedah on Shabbos, according to anybody. Why not? It's certainly the equivalent of a roofed-in Bavarian, right? Because it's smaller than the Bavarian, and a house always has a roof. And nonetheless, Bein l'Rabbi Yehuda and Bein l'Rabbanan, they both agreed that unless you get that bird into a closet, it's not considered to be tzedah. So you see that a Bavarian is not considered to have entrapped the bird. That explains the contradiction now. Amar Rabba Bar Avuna, well, it depends on the bird. Acha betzipor dror askidan, she'ina mekabelet marut. What we're talking about over here, in the case that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim agree that you've got to have a closet in order for a bird to be considered to be nitzod and not a bevarian as opposed to the Mishnah, that's talking about a specific type of bird. Now, when we say a specific type of bird, that does not necessarily mean a specific species of bird. Because as the Pri Chodesh explains, he brings many rayas that there are tziporim that are called tzipor dror that are kosher to eat, which obviously we're talking about over here. And there's many other gemaras that talk about a tzipor dror that is not kosher to eat. So obviously it can't be a species, despite the fact that there are those who try to explain tzipor dror as a particular type of bird, and they even give in names for it. But it's a actual set of birds. What it means is a type of bird that is extremely independent. And that's what the word dror means. Dror means independence, means to be at liberty. Ukrotem dror b'chol ha'aretz. And therefore, as Rabbi Shmuel explained, the Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel, why do we call Tzipori Dror, Tzipor Dror? Because it's Dora b'bayit kebasadeh. It's free wherever you put it. So it's just as free in a house as it is in a field, meaning you're going to have just as rough time to get that bird in your house as you would out in the field. Because other birds, if they're not part of the set of drawer-type birds, when they find themselves enclosed like that, they sort of give up. You know, and they accept the fact that, okay, you know, we're not free enough to go where we want. But the Tzipor Dror is not like that. It's not going to be in the least bit more likely to come little birdie, and sit down on your finger just because it's in the house. So because of that, it's a completely different situation. It's called a drawer from the word dor, dari dari. It lives wherever it wants. So it's dara babay kabasadeh. So the Mishnah and the Braita over there, they were talking about regular birds, not Tzipori Dror. And when they are in an enclosed Bavarian, or in an enclosed house with a roof. So over there, in Okinami, they're considered to be nitzot. Okay, so now we've got an answer. Now, the truth is, you could give another answer based on the fact that now you're changed what we're talking about. We could do that too about the chayot. We don't have to make it a machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda, because hashtadatit la'achim, and now that you're showing me that you can actually simply say that the Braita and the Mishnah are referring to different situations. So you could do that for Chaya Chaya also. And then you wouldn't need to say it's a machlokas. What you could say is that the Mishnah that says that you can take a Chaya out of a Bavarian, that's referring to Bevar Katan. And the Braita that says you're not allowed to, that's referring to a Bevar Gadol. And what would define, that's not a very useful definition, big and small. So, you know, who is big and who is small? And when we talk about that, of course, it has a very specific definition. Amar Avashi, look, it's nogea, the actual concept of tzedia. If you can simply run at that animal and catch it just by running at it once, and you motile b'chat shichya, you get there in one jump, that's called a beaver cutter. But if you got to start running around, and now you're running to one direction, you try to trap the animal, get it to move back into the corner, and then it tries to run away to the right, you stand at the right, so on. And it's going to take you 3 minutes of all types of different types of running and jumping and so on. That's not trapped. And if it's got room for the animal to play around like that, then that is called a beaver gadol. And the same thing would be true if not necessarily in terms of the size, but in terms of hideouts. So let's say if it's got it's got a lot of different niches in it where the animal can try to hide out, and you're going to have to be jumping from one niche to another. Then that's called a beaver gadol. And if not, so it doesn't have where to hide out in, that's called a beaver katan. Or it could be, as Tosis explains, we're talking about over here, a standard height of a wall for a Bavarian. And that if you ordered a Bavarian, you would always get that height, because otherwise the shear over here makes no sense at all. And that would be Kolecha Nafti Tula de Katli Hadadi, where the walls reach each other's shadow. So meaning at different points of the day, it's the most likely explanation. At different points of the day, the sun will bring the shadow of the different walls in different directions to the same midpoint. And that means that the entire Bavarian will be covered ultimately by the shade at one point or another. That is called a Bever Kata. And anything else is a Bever Gadol. And if it's a Bever Gadol, then you gotta leave it to Bever. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Lo kol ha-Bavarian Shavin, it's not all the same. And Omer v'yasem Rabbi Yudah Mishmuel, Halachah, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, this, in fact, is the halacha, that you can only take from a bever that it's already considered to be trapped. How exactly you define that, whether it's in terms of one jump, or whether it's in terms of not having where to hide out, or so on, fine, that's a machlokas, but the halacha is quite clear. What do you mean, Rav Yosef, when you say the halacha? I didn't see anybody arguing on that. Didn't we just explain the machlokas in between the Mishnah and the Braita is not a machlokas, but we said it depends on the Bevar. So then that would mean that even the Chachomim in the Mishnah, they weren't arguing on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel when Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, not every Bevar is the same. Everybody agreed that not every Bevar is the same. So what do you mean the halacha is like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? So Rabbi Yosef said, so what do you care? So it's even better. So if nobody argues, so for sure the halacha is like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. So what are you driving me crazy for? And as usual, Abaye's response is, what do you think we're doing over here, singing rap songs? Gemara, Gemara, Zmuratatai. I mean, what? Halakha is like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. What is that supposed to mean? This is not an entertainment here. We're trying to talk intelligently. If there's no machlokas, how do you posket halakha is like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel just because it adds a nice line to your rap song? That makes no sense. Zakla. So then we give the general rule. Okay, so what do you mean by mechusar tzedah? Now, this is a little bit problematic because we just spent the past 10 minutes explaining what we mean by mechusar tzedah when we're coming to explain the difference between the Mishnah and the Braita, which obviously is going to be directly applicable to Reb Shimon Galil. And now all of a sudden we're asking as if we never thought of that question before. And what's even worse, as Tosis points out, is that we give a different explanation. So what in the heck? How did that happen? So what Tosis understands is that we have moved on from our discussion about animals to be talking about birds. That's the point. And when we were saying it's not all the same, we meant in terms of birds, it's not all the same. And therefore, the other shear that we're about to bring now is applicable to birds, because over there, it's very, very different. Catching a bird versus catching a deer is very different how you go about doing it. So what would be called mechusar tzedah when it comes to birds, is Tosis' understanding, and he says that explains why we immediately move on from here, as we'll see, into discussing the pigeons and the geese and the chickens and so on. So what would be defined as mechusar tzedah? Om Rav Yosef, Om Rav Yehuda, Om Shmuel, Kol She'omer, Havei Mitzudah V'Nitzudeno. If you have to say, well, let's bring a trap so that we can trap it. So then if you need some kind of help in order to get it trapped easily, so then that is considered to be a mechusar tzedah. So again, according to Rashi, he was not machalik between birds and chayas. This is just a different way of putting the shear that we said earlier in terms of chachichya or having a place to hide and stuff like that. But according to Tosis, it leads directly into this next mimer, which is Omer Le'Abaye. Well, what about avazim and tarnagolim? So for geese and for chicken, we always will say, bring me something to get hold of this goose, will you? And nonetheless, the Braita says that if somebody is tzad avazim and tarnagolim and yondei hardisi od, so then he is actually potter, because these are things that live with you. They're considered to be nitzad, even though every time you need to catch one, you'll always take some kind of net or something to make it easier to grab it or something. So how do you explain that? So it's clear that just because you need to use a net to grab it, or it's easier to use a net, that is not what determines whether it's already considered to be nitzad. Omer Rabba Bar Avuna, Omer Shmuel, it depends. Because the case that you're talking about, where the geese and the chicken, those are things that will always come back to the chicken coop at night. So they may run around during the day, and you want to go catch them, fine. You know, you'll go chasing them around the yard, and so on. But at night, they're going to end up back in the chicken coop. What Rabbi Yossi was talking about, those are talking about halalu ein ba'im l'kluv l'erev. So he was saying that there where you need a net or something, that is not considered to be trapped. But something that's living in the coop with you, that is considered to be trapped. Yes, the Gemara, how is that true? What about the cases of yone shovach and yone aliyah? So these are yonim that they hang out in your attic, right? And the thing is, they always come back at night. They always get up there, and nonetheless, It says that if somebody is tzad, yone shovach and yone aliyah, or the kind of birds that end up hanging out, they build their nests, in the tfichim, in the birot, I'm sure you've seen these things, at least those of you who hang around the old city, where they have these jars, and they put the jars on their edge into the wall. So sometimes you'll see a whole mirpeset where the railing is all jars. And those jars actually are often inhabited by birds' nests. They're little bird houses. And that's what it's referring to with the tziporim, that they go out in these tfichin. And the halacha over there is that despite the fact that the birds will always come back there at night, we don't consider it to be the same as the chickens coming back to their coop. And it says the halacha is over there that you would be chayev. So you see that even a bird that comes back to its place is still not considered to be trapped if you're going to need something to trap it. And how then do you answer the problem about the chicken and the geese? So there's got to be a different criteria. Ela, Omer Rabba Barvuna, Meshmuel, there is an additional point that I didn't mention. It's still correct what I said. The difference between a bird that'll come back to roost, but halalu boim lekluvam la'erev and mizonotam alecha. And that's the point. If they both have to come back to the coop at night, and that's where they see their place of living is, but not just because it's a comfortable place to hang out, to go to sleep, but because there's food there. They depend on you for their food. If they depend on you for their food, then if they also are going to always come back to the coop, then they are considered to already be trapped. Now, this is a message to teenagers. Please pay close attention. If this is where you get your food and it's where you hang out in your pad, you are trapped. Even if it looks like dad needs a net to get you, you're trapped. So, it might be time to leave now. I've got to go away. Anyway, so that would be the difference. Whereas halalu ba'in lekluvam la'erev, but ein mizonotam alecha. If they are not dependent on you for their food, so even though they may come out and hang around the pad, but as long as they got a job, they're not trapped. Okay. Another approach for why you're chayev on trapping a pigeon, but not for trapping a goose. I mean, like, what exactly is the difference between the pigeons that hang out in your dovecot and the chicken that comes back to roost? Sort of Mori Omar, look, it's very simple. I mean, the pigeons, they get away from you. Whereas the other ones, the geese, the chicken, they don't easily get away from you. Lo avida l'rabuye. Well, once you try, you really want to get them, they let you get them. What is that supposed to mean? Any type of bird is gonna get away from you. I mean, you have to work to catch them. Kulu nami avide l'revuye. No, but the difference is the pigeons, they will even leave the dovecot. That's the difference. The geese and the chicken, they will make all kinds of noise and go running around, but they'll go running around in circles. They're not going to go running out to the jungle, and they're going to still remain in the area of the coop. So because of that, they're considered to basically be psychologically trapped. Okay, they didn't escape from the coop. And this brings us to our perennial rebel who's still on the motorcycle, our Capitan. Go for it.
He flew the coop.
Now, the question is, on the Gabe Yontev, what the din is where you find animals in a trap. But, I mean, the question over here is, when were they trapped? So let's say you have Mitzudot Chayava Ovedagim, and you set these traps before Yontev. Then you come on Yontev, and you've got yourself a delicious bear to eat. No. You've got yourself a deer to eat in your trap. I got thinking about Gabi, who's got a bear running around his sukkah, a big bear. So, the deal is you don't know when it was trapped because it might have been trapped just today. And that would mean that it is totally and completely muktzah, because l'chora, even according to Rabbi Shimon, it would be muktzah, because it's something that is completely out of your hands. And therefore, if it was entrapped on Yontav, it shouldn't be mutter to take, according to anyone. And so the halacha is, lo yitomi em b'yontav elim ken yodea shenitzodom erev Yontav. You have to know for a fact that they were in the trap before. So it appears to be saying you have to be 100% sure. Now, there was a story once where a certain guy came and he brought fish to Rabbi Gamliel on Yontav. And Rabbi Gamliel said, look, there's nothing wrong with those fish. They're mutter. I just don't like this guy and I'm not accepting them. But I don't want people to be led to believe that the reason that I didn't accept his fish is because those fish were usher. So therefore, mutarim hein, ela she'ein ritzoni lekabel himenu. Now, this story makes no sense because in the context, he's contradicting what the Mishnah said. Right? The Mishnah said you absolutely must know that it was trapped for before Yontav. And then it brings the story of Rabbi Gamliel where there's no way he could have known, where the guy brings him something on Yontav that he might very easily have gotten on Yontav. He might have gone fishing, brought him these fish on Yontav. And Rabbi Gamliel says, well, there's no problem, except I don't like the guy, so I'm not taking it from him. So in some silly story. So then basically you're contradicting the first part of the Mishnah with the second part. That's true, says the Gemara. And that's exactly the way the intelligent reader is clued by Rebbe to realize that the Mishnah is Chisuri Mechasra. There's a piece missing in this Mishnah, and you have to put in the following. That Sofek Muchan is Asur. It doesn't say those words, but that's the first part of the Mishnah basically says, if you ain't sure, you can't take. So just to put that into three words, Safek Muchan Osir. That's the first part of the Mishnah. But here's what you have to add. V'Rebbe Gamliel Matir. Umase Nami B'Nochri Achad, etc., etc. So those three words that Rebbe Gamliel is Matir are missing from the Mishnah. And the Maisa that we bring is the Maisa to show the Rebbe Gamliel story of Matir. Rebbe Yeram Shmuel, we do not paskin like Rebbe Gamliel. In fact, we paskin like the Tanakama that Safek Muchan is osur. And that because of that, it would be no heter to take it. Now here is something that we mentioned at the very beginning of the Masechet, back at Daf Gimel. And that is that it ought to be a suffix to Rabbana. Because, I mean, what's the big issue over here? The issue is muktzah, that's all. And right now, it's in the trap. Nobody did any isser in getting it in the trap. Why in the world wouldn't I be allowed to eat it? So why is this not the Safek Muchan? Why is it not a Safek Derabbana? And therefore, it should be Lekula. Why are we saying that we pass that it's Lechomra? So this is brought by the Tosafos Yeshonim early on in the Masechet as a Yesod in the Dinim of Muktzah. That because of the early nature of the Takana of Muktzah and the way that it actually starts at the time of the of Ezra, Nehemiah, and it's essentially based on psukim that begin there in Ezra, Nehemiah, they were machmer on muktzah to be even machmer on a suffix muktzah, to make it, in his language, a me'ein d'oraisa, so that it's not the normal type of suffix d'rabbanan. Okay, that's his approach. There's a lot of discussion on this sugya, but this is basically what it's based on right here. So therefore, we don't paskin like Rebbe Gamliel, and we would have to be machmer on it anyway. So this would be suffik tzeda, the Mishabura's lashon is, that afa gavda l'kama peskim, the whole iser of tzeda beyom tevena minata. Remember, we mentioned earlier, we mentioned the Ran and so on, and that's where this, the Shulchan Aruch himself paskins, k'moshe sasam ha-mechaber, his approach is like the other Rishonim, not like the Tosafos Yeshonim, that we're machmer over here, Mishum David Dover, Sheyesh Lo Matirin, Shari Efshel Lo Lo Ochlam Achri Yontav. And of course, the Chachomim were machmer, as we saw earlier, even on a Safek Rabbanan, on a Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirin. This is a different approach. Ikanamasinla. Now, some say that when Shmuel Paskin, Omer of Yerom Shmuel, Ein Alokak Rabbi Gamliel, he was not referring to this case in the Mishnah, but it was said, it means the same thing, but it wasn't said on that case. It was said on the following price. Ahotetanya. Sofek Muchan, Rabbi Gamliel Matir, Rabbi Yoshua Oser. And in this version, what happened was that Rabbi Yehuda said that Shmuel Paskind Halachak Rabbi Yoshua, which boils down to exactly the same thing. The difference is that here he's saying it in a positive language, Halachak Rabbi Yoshua, who says that Sofek Muchan is actually Oser, and the way he had to say it on the Mishnah, it was in a negative language because we didn't have any mention of Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah. We only had Rabbi Gamliel. So he had to say, Ein Halachak Rabbi Gamliel. According to this approach, he said it positively. Now, Halacha is like Rabbi Yoshua. There's even a third version of how he paskin this way. Again, it boils down to the same thing. That he was referring to the following Braita. Now, the Braita says, Shochatim min hanigarim biyom tov, avalo min harishatot u'min hamichmarot. So you're allowed to shecht an animal from a nigarin. Now, a nigarin is a very strange thing to refer to as a place for animals, because a nigar simply means a irrigation channel. So what in the world would it have to, how do you catch an animal in an irrigation channel? And basically what they would do was that since they would need water to be coming through, they would bring a nigar through an area, enclose it with a fence, and that would make an enclosure for an animal, which then was called a nigar, just as an aside. That's a very cute aside. So when flush toilets were introduced in Israel, and this was like, they were originally introduced not as what we call now flush toilets, meaning there was no tank that actually flushed. There was just a hole in the ground. And then there was a mechanism on top that was this equivalent of the modern mechanism that if it filled up with water, it then stopped. And it had something that stopped. And when you opened it up, it came out in a rush. And then it just went onto the floor around the hole in the ground. But anyway, the name of the device, you might see these in still in very, very old places where they haven't. The name of the device, because it was taken from a Canadian thing that had developed this thing, this is a long time ago, it was called the Best Niagara. I had a picture of Niagara Falls, and it was the Best Niagara. So in Hebrew, what was the word for this thing at the time? A Niagara. Because it was the best Niagara. It is a Niagara. Right? So this was a Niagara. Until today, there's one of the old plumbers, when they talk about replacing your toilet, they'll talk about putting in a new Niagara. It's like one of these wild things. So the relationship, it's interesting that Chazal always would take a word out of the Greek or out of the Latin that bore a resemblance to the Mocher in Hebrew. And it turned out that this Niagara was based on the Nigarim, which over here means the water that comes in through a flow channel. So even the original mistaken use of the Canadian was mechuber to today's Gemara. Anyway, so you're allowed to shecht an animal that you're taking, because these were here, from before Yom Tov. So it's the equivalent of the Bivaria. Avalomen or Rishatot, you can't take them out of nets, or out of traps of different kinds, because you have no idea when they got in there. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, I'll tell you, there's a way to know. If you have like this, let's say you had a long net, and it goes like, you know, for hundreds of feet, you're walking by one end of the net, and you see that it's all loose. So obviously an animal, you don't see any animal. But obviously an animal had gotten in there and had struggled with the net and had pulled it on the other side, and therefore you're seeing it loose on this side. So if you found it loose before Yom Tov, then you can rely that if there's an animal on the other side of it that you found on Yom Tov, it must have been stuck in there before, and it was struggling, and that's what pulled down the net before Yom Tov. So then, b'yaduah shemi erev Yom Tov nitzodu, and then it would be mutter. But if you only found it mekukal on Yontev, but it was not mekukal before Yontev, then for sure it was trapped on Yontev, and therefore it's usur. Now, obviously, this is an absurd contradiction. You're just contradicting yourself. First, you said, if you know for a fact that it was mekukal from Erev Yontev, then you can know biyadua that it was there from Erev Yontev. So, in other words, the only way you're allowed to use it is time at Abba Matzah Mekukalim. It's only because you knew for a fact that the animal had been trapped before. What does that mean? That if it was a suffix, so then it would have been usur. So then, look at the next words, Ema Seifa. But if you found them only Mekukal on Yontev, but before Yontev they were whole, then you know that it's usur. So, in other words, Mashma, that only if you're sure that it's usur, is it usur? For sure it was cut on Yontev, but time it a moment to make a column. But if not, if it would be a sveika, maybe it was me Erev Yontev, then you can allow the suffix and assume that me Erev Yontev needs a mutari. So how do you explain an absurd contradiction like that? Well, we answer that the way we often answer these type of things. That what it means to say is like this. Boom, but somebody could call him the Erev Yom Tov, then and only then can I use it because it was Nitzot Bevadai. But if it would be a suffix, then move on to the next stage. Then it's the equivalent of, if there's any suffix, it's Nasa Kamisha Nitzot Yom Tov, the Asurin. It would be the equivalent of having been trapped Bevadai. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that if you can be certain by the net, then it would be only then mutter, that it was there before. But if not, like we said before, that if it's suffik muhan, it's usur. And here too, we pask in the same thing. Now, the Mishnah talked about the case where a goy brought a gift of fish, and they might have been caught Dafka today, and nonetheless, Rabbi Gamliel said, it's okay. They're mutarim him. Now, note that he didn't say they're mutarim for what? Did he mean they're mutarim to accept, and you could put them in the fridge, and you can eat them tonight? Or did he mean that they are mutarim to bring it to Baruch Avram Sukkah, and to actually have him wake up, and to eat them right there, as if they're fresh herring? That was the question. In other words, there's two different madrigas that we always have when we talk about muktzah. There's muktzah to handle, and then there's muktzah la'achila. We are much more machmir when it comes to eating something than we are to simply move it from place to place. So when Rabbi Gamliel said they're mutarim, what did he mean, mutarim l'mayim? Rav says, well, he meant that it's okay to accept them from the goy, except I don't want them, but you could accept them from me, you could put it in the fridge. I never said you're allowed to eat it. Whereas Levi says, no, you're allowed to eat it. And Rav's comment on this was, so gentlemen, if you pay close attention to the difference between me and Levi, you will learn a very important moral principle. Moral principle about fish and mukta? Yes. Here is the moral principle that you can learn. Because I'm right and he's wrong. But why am I right? Not because I'm smarter. I am right because la'olam al yimna adam atzmo bibeit ha-midrash afilu sha'achat. If the Beis HaMidrash is open, do not go home to go to sleep. That's what you learn from here. Because here's how this happened. And I will tell you how poor Levi made this mistake. Me and Levi were both sitting there. And we're in the Beis HaMidrash, and we're learning with Rabbeinu HaKadosh, just as he said over this story with Rabbi Gamliel. And we asked him at night, we asked him, Rebbe, when Rabbi Gamliel says they're mutarim, what did he mean? And Rebbe said he meant that you're allowed to eat them. And then Levi went home and went to bed. Aha, not me. So then when Rebbe came back the next morning, he said that I made a mistake, and actually, he's only being matir to take them and to put them in the fridge. Now, I, who stayed in the Beis HaMidrash, was zochah to hear the end of the story, which is why I am telling you the truth. The right shot, namely, that you're allowed to only put it in the fridge. And therefore, I, who was there, I was hadripi. I said it over correctly afterwards. I said, I made a mistake. But Levi didn't come back in the morning. He's still sleeping. and he didn't change his mind. And that's the moral principle to derive from fish. Anyway, Meisvet. Enochri Shehevi Doron Yisrael. How about Stam? Okay. A goy brings something to a Jew on Yontif. So now the question is, can you accept it from him or not? Or are there issues that may imply that this is mukta? Things like maybe it came from outside of the tchum and so on. So the halacha is like this. Even if he brought you dagim mefulamim, mefulamim means like they look mamish fresh, they're dripping with water, they look like they've just been taken out from the depths of the tahom. This is the same lashon that we had in the Gemara Chagiga about tohu, remember? Avanim mefulamot. These are dagim mefulamim. And even if these are peirot b'nei yoman, which seems to mean that you know for a fact that these peirot were picked today, and it still says you're allowed mutarim. I don't know mutarim in what, but mutarim. So now, if you want to tell me, according to the Mandi Omar, Rav said it meant you can accept it from him to put it in the fridge, so then I understand why you're allowed to accept this fish. But according to Levi, who said mutarim is even to eat it, who is ever matir peros b'nei yoman? If they were picked that day, then they're definitely mukta. So who is matir you to eat them on yontav? Yeah, okay, fine. So, and now, according to Rav, now it makes sense. So the taimek and peros b'nei yoman, who's matir to eat them? And who's matir to move them? Who is ever matir moving peros b'nei yoman? I don't understand. It's just as problematic, according to Rav, as it was according to Levi. Nobody is matir peros b'nei yoman for anything. So anyway, you're going to have to deal with this issue. So put it in your pipe and smoke it. Don't come to me and make problems. Ella, obviously, what we're talking about over here, when it says that they were totally fresh, doesn't mean that they were literally totally fresh. It means we're talking about fish that the gills are reddish. So b'karbi d'adime. And we're talking about peirot that are surrounded with greenery, leaves, vegetables, and they look like they've been kept very fresh. But it doesn't mean that they were literally picked today. It means that they are very fresh and their freshness was maintained. So why do we call them b'nei yoman? Because they look fresh. And therefore, the reason that they're okay is because when you examine them, you see that they're not really fresh. And you see that they've been artificially refrigerated with the greens and so on, or that the fish show signs of having been taken out of the water yesterday, and therefore they've been kept fresh in the fridge and so on. So what's the Kiddush? The Kiddush is, says Rashi, that you might have thought that since they look so fresh, people will think that you're allowed to even accept a fresh fish or fresh fruit. Kamash Malanda Rabbana did not make a gezerah. But, I mean, if that's what we're talking about, it has nothing to do with the machlokas about Sofik Muchan. Omer of Papa, Hilchata? As far as the practical halacha is concerned, a goy brings something to a Jew on Yontif? So then, I'll tell you. Im yesh me'oto amin b'mechuber asur. If, let's say, he brings you apples, right? And right outside, there's apples that are on the tree. So then, the idea would be, if they're still attached to the ground, then that would mean that this guy, even if he's a goy, he went ahead and he picked these apples now because it was not yet time for the apple picking, which means that up until that point, these apples had been miyuchad to remain on the tree, and therefore they are definitely mukta. Even I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon is made that let's say if you take grapes, you put them up on your roof to make raisins, that was the case we had in the Mishnah. And that's the ultimate mukta, which even Rabbi Shimon is made in, because in the interim, you cannot use them. So fine. Then you have to assume that they're mukta. And if, however, you went ahead and you accepted them, then at night, you're not even allowed to use them right away, because you don't want to be nana from the work that he did for you on Yontif. Now, Rashi says that this means you cannot be nene from them on the first night, but the second night, if it was presented to you on the first day, so then memanav shach, you would be allowed to be nene, right? Says Tosfos, wrong. Because the reason that you can't be nene is because the Rabbanim were metakein not to ask the goy to do things for you, and therefore if he does do things for you, you should not gain from having asked him, and you'd have to wait the amount of time b'chdei she'yase, so you don't end up gaining anything, because let's say it took him 32 minutes to get this thing done for you, you're going to have to wait the same 32 minutes after Yanta before you're able to use it. And if that's the point, what's the difference if it's the first day or the second day? If you'd be allowed to use it on the night after the second day, it's still worth it for you to tell the goy to do it on the first day, because then after Yanta you'll be able to use it. So therefore, Taina is the sheet of the Gainim that we paskin, that the whole point is avoiding what you would be doing in asking the goy by making sure you do not get any benefit from it, and therefore it would be also the second day. Anyway, if, however, there is not any, in other words, all of the apples were picked, and ein oto amin b'mechubar, so then your only question is, did it come from outside of the tchum? So then, if this stuff was brought toch ha-tchum, so then there was nothing that was done this, that would have been usher on Shabbos, so then it would be mutter. But if it came from chutz ha-tchum, then you can't use it, neither on Shabbos or on Yontem, as we saw back in the Mishnah, Masechet Shabbos. If it was brought michutz l'tchum for Mr. Joe Yisrael, it can be still used by Mr. Shmo Yisrael, because the idea over here is that it's all the derabbanan, so that the person shouldn't ask for it. So if it wasn't even brought for that person, then we don't have to be cheshish that he's going to learn from this to ask for it the next time.